This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight, we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I'm taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there it was. There was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird,
the strange, the unlikable, and the unlivable.
Oh, boy, are we unlikable. Johnny and Billy here, and we talk weird things like Sasquatch and aliens and what else?
Ghosts and near-death experiences and all kinds of paranormal stuff.
Now, you are a former, what is it, psychologist, psychotherapist, psycho
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I was a...
psycho, all right.
A mental health professional for 20-some years, and...
So pretty much you're here to just evaluate me.
Exactly. That's my whole job.
Right.
These last 3 years, I've been sitting here across from you, just...
You were planted here by the government to keep...
That's right.
To keep tabs on what we're talking about,
trying
right?
to figure out what your brainwaves are doing.
Good luck. Oh, boy. Did you see where the FBI released this document warning that conspiracy theories are a new domestic terrorism threat?
I have seen that.
What did you think?
I think it's true, because people are creating these conspiracies that don't exist. It's like creating a problem that doesn't exist.
Now, when does a conspiracy theory turn into a conspiracy fact? And I remember our pal Illumirani talking about, why does it have to be a conspiracy theory? Why can't it be a conspiracy fact?
Well, because it's no longer a theory once it becomes a fact.
Right.
So there are conspiracies that do become fact mm-hmm. when they're uncovered. The whole idea of a conspiracy is not to let anybody know, you know, to be able to do this kind of behind closed doors. Like, let's take the JFK assassination. Okay, we know he was assassinated, although mm-hmm. there are some that don't believe it. And we know, based on the video, that he was shot. So mm-hmm. these are all facts.
Mm-hmm.
We know where he was and what time of day and what the temperature was. We know a lot about it. What we don't know exactly is who shot him. And so the conspiracy comes in who conspired to assassinate JFK. Was this just a random person who decided to commit an assassination, or was there a conspiracy by government officials to do this for some reason? Mainly the reason was that he wanted to stop the war in Vietnam, and there were some other folks that thought that it could become very profitable.
There were plenty of people that yeah. wanted to or had motivations or would have benefited with his demise, right?
That's right.
Okay, let's make it a little more current. Jeffrey Epstein, is that his name?
Epstein, yeah. So
hanging himself in his cell?
Epstein, who could probably damage the reputations of quite a number of American politicians, European politicians, maybe Canadian politicians or Mexican politicians, certainly some Russian politicians. And so the question then, that what the conspiracy is we know for a fact that Jeffrey Epstein died. Or, well, we don't really know that for a fact.
All right.
I mean, we're being told that he died, that he hanged himself. We're being told there was an autopsy and there were multiple broken bones. The question becomes, then, did he hang himself? Or did some others conspire to kill him? Or was it just some person in the jail that didn't like pedophiles?
They don't like that in prison.
No, they do not like that in prison. Pedophiles don't do well in prison.
Right, or anyone that harms children, period, even.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so the conspiracy theory, then, if we want to create one, is who killed Jeffrey Epstein? Was it self-inflicted? Was it some of the guards at the jail? Was it somebody that snuck in the middle of the night, slipped between the bars, hung him up, and slipped out? You know, or did somebody conspire, you know? Did somebody conspire by giving somebody the keys to his cell and allowing them to go in there and
I just read that the guard fell asleep while on duty. That was a headline, but as you know, the headlines are...
Well, you know, there's...
Hey.
The question is, do they fact-check their sources? When they get this information, are they fact-checking it?
Well, how can you fact-check if they give you false information in the first place?
Well, then you have to go ask questions of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's ways of verifying things. We have scientific ways of verifying things.
Mm-hmm.
Good journalists will verify information. They'll make sure they have multiple sources, while bad journalism will just take whatever source, you know, states. It's kind of like all the... If somebody goes on YouTube and tells a big long story about who killed Jeffrey Epstein, and none of it is factual, does anybody fact-check this guy, and does anybody verify? Or do they just take it straight from his feed and put it on the news?
Right.
And that's bad journalism when we do that. So part of defeating conspiracy theories is basically good journalism, good fact-checking. When we look at Epstein or Kennedy or any of the other assassinations that have taken place, we have to question what the motives are. You know, what are the facts? What do we know for sure? And what are we just guessing at? You know, just being a relatively uninformed citizen, if we watch the video of the Kennedy assassination, you know, we can draw conclusions. I mean, we can say, yeah, it does look like bullets came from different directions. It looked like they came from the front rather than the side. I mean, there's all kinds of conclusions that we can draw, but we have to know something about ballistics. We have to know something about the type of weapons that were used, the type of shooter that might have done this if it wasn't Lee Harvey. And there's a lot of things we need to know, you know, and it's the same thing on the Epstein thing. Okay, so we get information that the guard fell asleep. Now, did the guard fall asleep deliberately so that this could take place?
Or? Let me just take a nap here.
Yeah. So we can create all kinds of stuff in our head. What we have to do is look at the facts and, you know, draw our conclusions based on facts and not conjecture about what might have happened.
What if the facts are being withheld from the top? then there's nothing you can do about it, right?
Well, who's withholding these facts?
I'm just speculating. Let's just say, let's say the prison warden is like, hey, I don't want this to get out, that we have dirty people or we look away anything like that.
It happens in government all the time.
Let's just say that he fell asleep on the job, so everybody's covered. So if it's at the top and they're withholding or manipulating information, we're pretty much helpless, right?
Or if that information isn't even getting to the top.
Or that,
it could be withheld at the bottom.
Right.
Lonely little clerk in an office says, I'm going to take this information that could hurt my boss or my friends or whatever, and I'm going to throw it in the shredder.
So we're SOL then, right?
Not exactly. I mean, there are other methods of investigating. I mean, I'm not a professional investigator, but...
Why not?
But, because I'm sitting here with you.
If I were
a professional investigator, I wouldn't be on the radio.
Okay.
I'd be out investigating.
How about the Sasquatch conspiracy? I know hundreds, if not thousands, of people. I don't know them personally, but I know at least 100 people that have seen a Sasquatch.
See, I wouldn't call Sasquatch a conspiracy. I would call Sasquatch a phenomenon, because I don't think anybody is trying to hide facts or cover anything up or mislead us. Well, maybe they are trying to mislead us. The thing is, if Sasquatch exists, and we believe that simply based on evidence, not necessarily taking every sighting as gospel,
right,
but looking at the evidence. So we have footprints, we have hair, we have people who have
eyewitness testimony.
Eyewitnesses. We have people who say they have seen them. What leads us to believe that this person is telling the truth? That's what the good investigators do. They ask questions and they look at everything. How many people do you think have reported a Sasquatch?
Thousands.
I bet it's hundreds of thousands worldwide.
Right.
So I would put the number worldwide at
hundreds of thousands
of people have reported seeing a Sasquatch over a long period of history.
Right. Back to the Norwegians, the Vikings, and Leif Erikson.
Sure. I mean, it could even be more than a million.
Right.
That becomes a certain body of evidence. So you can kind of, if you start looking at these reports, this is just people who have reported seeing one.
Right.
They have no other evidence other than their eyewitness. So you start comparing testimony.
Mm-hmm.
You start comparing all the testimony. And you look for testimonies that match up.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, people that can describe this thing with some detail, how does that match up with other people's description?
Right.
So you can start categorizing this information. If you have enough people that say Sasquatch is a big, brown, hairy, ape-like looking thing,
mm-hmm.
let's say I have 100,000 people that say that, then we can start to make assumptions about that. That people have seen something big and brown and hairy that walks upright, and we believe that it may be Sasquatch. That's not absolute proof. I forget what they call that. There's a name for that kind of proof. Anyway, that's not absolute proof. But then, when we take the other proof that we have, the footprints, the any DNA audio samples that people have, and we start to apply those things that we, other facts that we have, other information, and start to apply those to the people's stories. If we ask them, did you hear any sounds when you saw the Sasquatch? And if some of them say no, then of course you should separate them out. If some of them say yes, you ask them what kind of sounds. If what they're saying matches what you believe is Sasquatch sounds, then you put those people in a group.
The crazy group?
The crazy group. Who sees Sasquatch and thinks it talks to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that based on our research, we've looked at thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of reports. We've looked at the evidence that we have scientifically, that we've gathered from a scientific basis, and we start to put it all together, the eyewitness stuff plus the other evidence, and we can draw a conclusion on that. It's not absolute. It may not even be absolutely right. It might just be a wild guess. At least it's a wild guess based on scientific evidence versus a wild guess based on, you know, somebody's intuition.
Anecdotal evidence?
Anecdotal evidence.
Well, that's a bunch of New Age tooey.
Well, it probably is, but hey, what the heck?
There have been some Sasquatch sightings locally. I don't have a lot of information other than someone saw a Sasquatch at wherever.
So when you, let's just say you've got people that saw a Sasquatch.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to pinpoint their location when they saw it. How many people in the world have seen Sasquatch in the same location? Right here in Grace Harbor,
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the most reported areas mm-hmm. for Sasquatch and UFOs and that kind of thing. Is it that's just that people in this area are a little crazier? Or...
No comment.
Or do they actually see something?
Mm-hmm.
Are they actually seeing something that is unexplainable? Sasquatch or a UFO or... there's all kinds of strange things in the woods.
Dogman and
yeah,
the little people and Bill wandering around the woods naked.
You know, and sometimes it's natural phenomenon. What, a couple years ago there was a meteor that crashed into the ocean about 18 miles
right.
from my house. And when it happened, there was a big flash of light and what sounded like a big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire house just rattled and shook, not knowing exactly what it was. I could say that the Navy, who has a base just up the coast from us, set off a bomb. And I could start peddling this theory that
mm-hmm.
the Navy was testing some kind of bomb out there off the coast, and that's what this was. You know, maybe a little nuclear explosion or something.
Mm-hmm.
We have other evidence. We have other people that, you know, are watching the skies and watching these things happen. And when we combine all the evidence, we figure out that it's a meteor, not a bomb. So my theory that it's a bomb is really just a theory and can't be proven because I have no other evidence. But if we look at all the other evidence, a variety of different people that are not connected to one another,
mm-hmm.
so it's much harder for them to conspire, then we have to accept that as, you know, reality. So when, you know, 10 people who are not related in any way say the same thing, then you have to believe that there's some validity to it.
That's New Age tooey.
But that's why it's a theory. It doesn't become a fact until we can prove what it is.
So, when you have a conspiracy theory that's proven as fact, do you still call it a conspiracy fact or just fact?
No, it's just a conspiracy. It's not a theory anymore. It's a conspiracy. So if we found out that George Bush and Lyndon Johnson conspired to have John F. Kennedy killed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is one of the theories. If we accept that, and if we can then prove it, if we can, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt,
right.
can prove that there was some communication between Bush, who was the CIA director at the time,
right.
and LBJ, who was the president, or the vice president, and if we can show that there was some collusion there, then it becomes just a conspiracy, not a theory anymore. Because once it's proved,
mm-hmm.
then it is a conspiracy. And if it's unproved, it's a conspiracy theory. And if it goes unproved for a very, very long time, you know, it may not be true. Because people try to embellish these things, too. That's mm-hmm. the other problem is... We're not very good at...
Anything?
Sticking to the facts.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, I mean, eyewitnesses are notoriously bad witnesses in court because it's hard to remember exactly what you saw.
Right.
In fact, when I was in school studying psychology, there was they showed us a film. So there's people, it was like a classroom, and people were... interacting and talking. and a guy in a gorilla suit runs by. Just momentarily, just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people didn't see it. They just didn't, it didn't register on their brain. Yet it was right there. What happens is we sometimes don't see things that are unfamiliar to us. So when something unfamiliar to us presents itself, we actually have to look at it and try to identify it. And our brain works really, really fast to kind of run through all the possibilities. But if we only have maybe a half a second to see it, we may not have the time to process all the information, and therefore the brain just kind of kicks it out. When we have eyewitnesses, people that say they saw something, it's not always very accurate. So we have to back it up with facts. We have to investigate. I was in a car accident once where a car rear-ended me.
Yeah.
And it actually, it hit another car before it rear-ended me. It was late at night and it was dark. It was a dark street. And I couldn't tell who was in any of the other cars. So I called 911. And they kept asking me, well, you know, is the person in the car behind you a male or a female? Well, I don't know. I can't really see them.
Right.
And they said, well, are they, you know, are they black? Are they white? Are they Hispanic? Are they, you know, what do they look like? They have short hair, long hair, all that. I said, I can't see them. I couldn't see them, so I don't know. And, you know, and then they wanted me to take a guess.
Hmm.
Well, so I said, all right, you know.
I'm at, all right.
Appease this 911, 911 operator and give her something. And so I gave her a description. So they cops came and they asked me to pull around and park in this parking lot and said they'd be back in a couple of minutes and talk to me. So the cop comes back to me in a couple of minutes and he said that the car and the person in the car were nothing like what I described.
Oh,
and I
wow.
said, well, I told them that I couldn't see it. It was dark. I couldn't tell what it was. It was a dark colored car, you know, and when it hit me, it knocked off the front grill, so it didn't have any markings, you know, any logos on the front grill. And so I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. All I know is that a dark car hit me on a dark street in the middle of the night, and it hit another car. They caught the person. They were about two blocks away. You know, I don't know how they caught the person, but they said they caught them, and my description was absolutely useless, even though I was right there seeing it. Of course, I was trying to look in my side view mirror of my car to see behind me, to see who was in there. And I could see a human being, you know, somebody moving around in there, but I couldn't tell what they looked like. So this is what happens when we have eyewitnesses. They either don't see very well.
Well, you only have one eye.
Well, I know, but I see better with one eye than most people do with two. So it's, you know, it's not a big a big problem.
Right.
It's kind of scary sometimes, though.
I bet.
Having, you know, it's you have to be very aware when you only have one eye. You have to pay attention to things because things can sneak up on you on your blind side.
Well, it's Strange Harbor where we talk about the weird. And let's see, coming up, oh, someone stopped me at Safeway to tell me about an experience. We'll talk about it coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking about conspiracy theories. As I told you before the break, Dale stopped me at Safeway the other day to tell me about this time his wife flew to Arizona, and when they're in the airplane, I forgot where he said they were flying over, but they saw an airstrip in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Just in the middle of nowhere, just an airstrip all by itself. she took a picture of this airstrip on her cell phone, and then the cell phone never worked again. They had tech-savvy people look at it. They sent it back to the company. Nobody could get it to work again after taking a picture of this lone airport strip in the middle of nowhere, and they ended up having to, like, wipe the phone completely in order to get it to work.
You never know what that airstrip is. It could be a corporate airstrip. It could be a private airstrip. It could be a military airstrip.
Mm-hmm.
They might have used like an electromagnetic pulse, which would scramble up your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a lot of things that could happen that could cause that. I mean,
was it also a coincidence?
Well, that's the other thing. It can also be a coincidence. In other words, it could be two things that happen simultaneously that are unrelated,
mm-hmm.
and yet we want to relate them. This is how these theories began, because people say, well, I was taking a picture of this strange airstrip and my phone went dead and I couldn't revive it. Well, the question then becomes, did your phone go dead because of what you saw, or is it just a coincidence it went dead when you were taking a picture of this airstrip? I can understand if you're taking a picture close up of maybe an alien or a UFO.
Mm-hmm. And then it stopped working.
And then your phone stopped working. But usually, I mean, to just target a phone would be very difficult. Electromagnetic pulse could shut everything down, you know, within a certain radius of where you are. But to be able to just shut down your phone, I don't know, there's probably such technology, I imagine, that, you know, because our cell phones use radio waves, and those radio waves are bounced off towers that, and we can identify what phones are communicating with what towers. If it was, say, a government thing, they could identify the phone, and they could probably send a signal that would disrupt it.
Well, they make things to shut down cell phones, like in schools.
Sure.
So I'm sure something like that would be totally...
Sure. But, you know, we can get off on all these kind of things. We can create whatever we want in our minds. We're very creative beings, people are. And we like things ordered, and we like things explained. We don't like unexplained phenomena. When I'm driving down the road and my cell phone doesn't work, and I'm in front of the casino, and I can't absolutely explain why my cell phone doesn't work, I can say, oh, well, they're jamming the signal. When in reality, they may not be. If we were all well-trained scientists, we could figure all this out on our own, but we're not.
Well, you're not.
Well, I'm a social scientist.
Yeah.
And
you are.
Yeah. But we, you know, there's just unexplainable things in this world, and there are things that are explainable, but we don't have an explanation. So I don't know why certain things happen.
Our friend Mary Joyce from Skyships Over Cashiers recently posted some pretty interesting headlines of a naval officer witnessed evidence of ETs in Antarctica.
Very interesting. What kind of evidence did he... That led him to believe that.
Former naval officer who flew on more than 300 missions in Antarctica, and he said he saw things he and his crew were not supposed to see, evidence of extraterrestrials. This sounds like this happened a while ago, right? So why wait so long?
Well, that's a good question. Why wait so long? Lots of reasons. Sometimes when people have information, there's an old saying that knowledge is power. Well, information is power, too. Information is valuable. They may have waited so long because they were trying to sell that information to someone and make a profit on it. We never know why people hold on to information for a long time. You know, or it might just be that they're afraid that their reputation will be damaged, or that they'll be ridiculed, or, you know, people will think that they're, you know, crazy, or... You know, if you're a pilot, there are a lot of rules and regulations, and being the slightest bit crazy probably isn't going to go in your favor. So if you start seeing things that are considered unusual, somebody's probably going to say something about it, and you might lose your license to fly. If you're in the military, God, I mean, you got to really be careful what you say in the military, because, you know, they can kick you out for just about any reason. There's lots of reasons why people might hold something. You know, it's, if they're going to sell it, of course, they've got to find a buyer. That takes time. If they're going to write a book about it, that takes time, sometimes years. You know, even if they're just going to write a story about it, it sometimes takes years. You know, some people are fast writers, like Stephen King, who can, you know, write a 600-page novel in 35 minutes. But, no, I don't think he's that quick. But it's the man is prolific.
Seems like it.
He can write books very quickly. Of course, he has a whole staff of people that write with him and for him. But that doesn't mean that it's not his inspiration and his knowledge that's telling the story. But not everybody has that ability to be, you know, a prolific writer. I'm a writer. I've written a book, and it would probably take me a long time to write a story about something. I'm much faster now than I was because I do a lot more writing. But if you're not, you know, a writer by trade, you probably would take quite a long time to write something like that up. And then, you know, if you want to get it published, say in a magazine or something, not only the time it takes to do the interviews, but to write it up, to verify it. Most magazines want you to verify all your information. Once you submit it, I mean, once you get to that point, you've used up a lot of time. Once you submit it to the magazine or newspaper, they could take anywhere from 2 months to 6 months to 8 months, even a year before they publish it. And during that time, you have to agree not to talk about it, so that when it comes out, it sounds like new material. So there's tons of reasons why people don't talk about things, or the stories don't come out for a long time. You know, I think that probably more than anything else, I think people are just afraid to talk about it. When I came home from Vietnam and I had had this incredible near-death experience on the battlefield, I tried to talk to people about it, but they just looked at me like I was crazy. They wanted to hear war stories, but they didn't want to hear that story.
Why is that?
I don't know. People are afraid of a lot of things. I certainly wasn't afraid of it, but nobody really wanted to hear it, so I just tucked it away and said, all right, that's okay. I'll just keep it to myself. I know what I experienced. I know what I felt. So, one of the things that, for me, that's been kind of a prominent process here is that I don't feel that I need to tell people everything. I don't feel that I need to share my life. If it's something I believe in, something I feel strongly about, sometimes I just don't care if other people don't believe me. We have things that we want to talk about and things that we don't, and sometimes we don't have anyone who will listen. 20 years after my near-death experience, an opportunity came up to talk about it. I did. And the next thing you know, everybody wanted to hear about it. And it was on TV, and people were writing newspaper and magazine articles about it. And, you know, it became a big deal. And even to this day, I mean, it's been 30 years now that I've been talking about it. And people still want to hear the story. They still want to hear the...
Now,
what happened? So,
why do they call, or why do you call what you experienced a near death when it sounds like you did die?
Well, yeah, I think that the term near death experience is, I think it's misleading, because number one, you can have this experience without being near death. It's just that the people who had reported having these experiences, most of them were near death at some point. The majority of them are people that were undergoing surgeries and died and then were brought back to life. Or people that were in traffic accidents or some kind of accident, and they physically died, or at least they were close to dying, you know, and then they came back. And they have these experiences. But I've talked to a lot of people. In fact, I personally have had these kind of experiences without being near death. And I've talked to people that have had these experiences without being near death. And oftentimes they're in periods of well-being. Often when you're out in nature, which means that you're close to those. Yeah, there you go. You're out in nature. Life is good. You're kicking back. And
feel
all of
no
a sudden,
pain.
Man, there it is, the white light. But, you know, it's I don't know who named it the near-death experience. And personally, I didn't even hear that term. I never even knew that term until I first talked about it 20 years after it happened. So I had no idea it was called a near-death experience. In fact, I talked about it. I was in a class called Confrontations with Living and Dying. And the professor said, break into small groups and talk about your most profound experience with death.
Mm.
And I thought, oh my God, should I tell this story?
Right.
And I thought, yes, I'm going to tell. I'm going to do this, even though I've never told anybody in 20 years. I told the story, and I didn't realize the professor was standing right behind me listening.
Oh, boy.
And as soon as I finished, he said, what you had is a near-death experience, and you need to contact these people in Seattle. They have a group that you can go talk about this stuff. And, of course, he gave me the name and a phone number and everything, and like a typical male, I said, yeah, I'll get in touch with them. But I didn't. And actually what happened was a year later, I was in a library in Parkland, Washington, and there was a notice on the bulletin board that said, International Association of Near-Death Studies meeting here on Saturday. And I thought, hey, this is what that professor was talking about. But it wasn't the Seattle group. It was a different group. And I went to the meeting and started talking and told my story for a second time. And then it really took off. Then they said, oh, well, you got to go to Seattle and tell the Seattle group. Which was very daunting because the first group of people that I talked to about this, there was about, I think there was five of us in the small group in this class that were working together. And then at this meeting in Parkland, there was six people there. And so I thought, well, if we go to Seattle, there's probably like 10 or 15 people there. Well, when I showed up in Seattle at the meeting, there were about 150 people in the audience. Hmm. And I told them my story, my near-death experience. And that set off a whole chain of events that I got to tell the story nationwide and worldwide. But it still took me another 10 years to write the book. So, in fact, a little longer than that, almost 13 years to actually get the book published. So, you know, things happen in their own time.
Okay. Are you familiar with Storm Area 51?
Storm Area 51. No, I'm not.
It started out as a joke, but it's kind of snowballed into something bigger. It was a petition of people that were willing to go and storm Area 51 and just barge in.
Oh, okay.
They're like, if there's enough of us, they can't stop us. They can't shoot us all. They can't arrest us all.
1.3 million people have signed up to storm Area 51 in Nevada. What could go wrong? We told you about this on The Edge before. A group called, created a Facebook event called Storm Area 51. They can't stop us all. Organizers say to meet on September 20th and rush onto the secret military base to, quote, see them aliens. Organizers admit up front that this is all a joke, but local police, they're taking it seriously. They say they are ready to arrest anyone who tries to trespass on the base and will use non-lethal force, they say, including tear gas and pepper spray. Meanwhile, the Air Force issued a statement saying it is aware of the Facebook post. A military spokesman issued this warning. The Nevada Test and Training Range is an area where the Air Force tests combat aircraft. We do not discuss specific security measures, but any attempt to illegally access military installations or military training areas is dangerous. And now celebrities are getting in on the joke. Today, Lil Nas X just dropped an Area 51 themed music video for his latest Old Town Road remix. Thank goodness for that. Kevin Jonas tweeted that the Jonas Brothers Happiness Begins tour will include a post-raid rave. And singer Lizzo and actor Danny Trejo also have shared their own Area 51 memes, though none have actually said they plan to be in Nevada on September 20th.
A lot of folks are taking the internet-fueled idea of storming Area 51, where conspiracy theorists think the government has aliens on ice, as just clickbait. But it appears the U.S. Air Force is taking these threats seriously. National Security Correspondent Jennifer Griffin shows us tonight from the Pentagon.
It was a joke, but one the Air Force is taking seriously. A Facebook post, an avowed fake designed to get likes, announced a plan to raid the Air Force base in Nevada, known as Area 51, which has been at the center of UFO and alien conspiracy theories for decades. More than 1 million people have signed up for the Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us, event slated for late September, in which the post declares, "We can move faster than their bullets. Let's see them aliens." It's been enough to spook the Air Force, which doesn't use the term Area 51 to describe the 2.9 million acre live fire training range, the largest in the United States, located at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada. One of the many reasons Air Force officials don't want people to trespass on the base, they are worried some might be killed. Quote, any attempt to illegally access military installations or military training areas is dangerous. There has been renewed interest in UFO sightings since it was revealed earlier this year. The military has spent $22 million to research UFOs and announced new classified guidelines for how its pilots should report them. Last month, the Navy briefed several senators on Capitol Hill about UFO encounters like this one. From a Navy F-18 training mission 4 years ago off the east coast of the United States, an unidentified aerial phenomena.
You have objects that are doing things, maneuvering in ways without any obvious sign of propulsion.
It's not clear the 1.1 million Facebook followers who said they are going to storm Area 51 are real.
Do you think this is real? I think it's actually going to happen. I think some people are crazy enough to try to do this.
Well, crazy is a good word. I'm thinking morons, idiotic. There's some fools out there who are really looking forward to doing. They're going to plan a trip to go out there.
Right.
We saw like in the movie Independence Day when they was on top of the roof with signs with the aliens and they all got blown up, the smell of the rings, and rightfully so. I just wish the police force, the Air Force, I wish it would be lethal.
Yeah, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Is there any more on that?
Oh, there's a lot of morons there.
Storming the place is probably not the best way to deal with it, because even if you come armed, which most protesters don't, my understanding was this was a group of people that were just going to show up in mass, you know, a large group of people, and basically demand to come in and see it. You know, if you talk to the right people, I'm betting that you could probably get in. Just, I mean, not take a group, but just yourself and maybe one or two other people. I would start with some of the generals, and I would explain why I want to go.
Now, are they going to give you the time of day to even hear you talk
to
them?
Sure they will. Why wouldn't they?
I want you to try that, and then we'll go. I'll pay for the trip.
I've talked to generals lots.
Yeah, and get us into 51, Area
well,
51.
Well, you know, it might take some effort. You know, their first response is going to be no.
Oh.
So you've got to give them a reason to say yes.
Strange Harbor.
There we go. We're with Strange Harbor. We want to just come take a look around. I don't care if you had 100,000 people and you stormed Area 51. You aren't going to find anything.
This is what they're planning on doing.
You aren't going to find anything. You know why?
Why?
Because if there is anything top secret, if there is anything alien out there in a place where you're not going to be able to access it very easily,
mm-hmm.
they're probably more than willing to let you come look around, look in some of the hangar bays,
right.
check everything out. It's not like there's dead aliens laying all over the ground out there. You know, it's a test site for the military to test advanced weaponry, advanced flying things.
Is that why it's in the middle of the desert?
Yes. It's to keep the prying eyes from seeing what they're building. Part of it is for national security, okay? If we build a bomber, you know, a stealth bomber, and it's all built out in the open and in the public and everybody gets to come look at it, well, guess who else is looking other than the public? People that want to conquer our country and shoot down our bombers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to take a look at it and figure out how to, you know, knock it out of the sky or to stop it from flying and dropping its load wherever it might be dropping its load. That's why it's kept secret. People that we don't want to know about it don't know about it. But you find if you start talking to military people, politicians, public people, and you're not an a-hole about it, they'll usually give you the information you want.
You mean like,
most of it.
Like starting a petition to just storm?
Right,
storm
yeah.
It?
Yeah, I mean, that's stupid stuff. I mean, it isn't going to work first. You're not going to get anywhere with it because they have enough security to stop you even if you bring, you know, 100,000 people, which you won't.
Because
mm-hmm. you aren't going to get 100,000 people to show up out in the middle of the desert to storm Area 51,000.
Now it's almost turning into a music festival.
Yeah. Well, there we go. You know, we'll invite some bands.
Right.
Pretty soon.
Right.
We're having a good time. You know, it's starting to rain. We're making love in the mud. It's good. It's all good.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you would like to contact us, maybe share an experience. You could be on the show even if you want. Or
that's
just,
right.
Or we'll read your experience. Or you yell at Bill for his new-aged hooey, log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.